Gun chest uncut, yeah, you know that's us. Where we only speak the real and the real rock with us. Where we motivate the people and politic on success. Oh no, we ain't DJ Khaled, but they swear we the best. Gun chest uncut.
What's happening? It's Contrast Uncut, Season 3, Episode 2. Man, big shout outs to Bobby D Presents and Uncle Snoop's Army. I wouldn't be able to do this without you, brothers. Man, it's your host, DJ Juan Dollars, like I won some money, aka Zylo. You know, I got a very, very special guest. I got one of them mega songwriters, super producers that has worked for pretty much all of our favorite artists. I mean, he's worked with, for example, Meek Mills, Rick Ross, Westside Boogie, Eminem, Kevin Gates, Trey the Truth. I mean, I could keep on going, but I may run out of breath. I'm talking about fresh air, man. What's happening, brother?
What's good? What's good?
Man, bro, I can't complain. You know, quarantine out the way. And
yeah.
Rocking with you, man.
Stuck in the house.
What's up, man? You been busy?
Man, it's crazy because with the quarantine, you know, been stuck in the house, but I've still been busy, bro. Like, and it's like, if I wasn't in the house, I'd be even more busy. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, it's cool because it's like, it gives me a balance to be able to hang out with my daughter and at the same time still handle business so that when this quarantine is over, you know, we back full in effect. So, little setback, but not too much.
Man, I ain't gonna lie, my kids, they see me at home all the time now. They're like, you know what? Since daddy home, we gonna make it a deal. Every time daddy is home, if he on the phone, we gonna make it a problem.
Yeah, that's how my little girl is. That's why she upstairs right now.
I feel you. I understand it. So if my kids break in at some point, bro, the door's locked. But, you know, they're clever. They use a knife, a fork, something to get in here.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm just related to you because I understand what it's like.
Yeah, facts.
So, bro, I got a quote. You know, let me know how it relates to you. Or if it doesn't, it's all good. You won't hurt my feelings. It's Contrast Uncut. Anyone who has ever made anything of an importance was disciplined. Andrew Hickson.
Anyone who's made anything of importance was disciplined. Yeah, bro. That quote basically is basically, it's like life lessons. That's all that is. That's just it's a life lesson. Like for instance, with the coronavirus, if I make spending family time and importance, then, you know, it makes me look back on back when I wasn't with my family because I picked other stuff over my family. You know what I'm saying? And now that I'm stuck with my family, it shows me the importance of being with my family. You know what I'm saying? So that's how that quote, I mean, and it could relate to a lot of stuff, bro. Honestly, that's just one example, but it could relate to a lot of stuff, bro.
Yeah, no, you said something big because, you know, family is such an important thing. We do things all because of family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that word that we shine away from, the elephant in the room, is sacrifice. And
yeah.
Like, you know, that whole quote is like, you have to take a lot of sacrifice and discipline to mm-hmm. get to the places you want to go. You got to create that bridge to get over and make something of it. And then, you know, you are going to lose time because that time over there was lost over here.
Yeah.
It is what it is because, you know, you're able to come back with fruits of labor and, you know, bless things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got some nice hardware in the background.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'm there. I got one more on the way, but the coronavirus, boy, she just messing up everything. So,
man, I wait to get that one. Bro, it's worse than Black Friday and Christmas together.
Crazy. Trying to tell you, it's crazy. It's crazy. But yeah, I got a few plaques. Plan on getting some more. I know I got two records coming out this year that I'm definitely going to get two more for. So I can't wait.
So let me ask you this, brother, as we talking about music, you know, did the game choose you or did you choose the game?
The game definitely chose me. It wasn't one of them things where I got out of high school, I got out of college and said, oh, I don't want to work a 9-to-5. Let me just do music. Like, I've been doing this since I was 14 years old and singing in the church choir, bro. Like, it was one of them things where I was way ahead of the curve before it even happened. Like, I genuinely love to make music. I could not make no money tomorrow off of it, you know, and I'm still going to do it.
So were you in the drum, doing the drums, or were you playing the key?
I was singing on the choir.
So you took the vocal instrument itself and was like, you know what? I could play with everything else now.
Yeah, because I was an artist at first, and I didn't know nobody. Like I said, because I was just thrown into it, I didn't know nobody making beats. So I was an artist. So I was making my own beats. So that's how I started. And then my best friend, he was making beats too. Then it became a competition. So now we both making beats, but I'm trying to be better than him. And at the same time, I'm still making my own music to put out, so I'm writing. So at a young age, I started it, and thank God, because, you know, I've learned a lot since then.
Wow. I mean, you know, what was some of the moments of confirmation of this is what you should be doing with your life? You know, don't take another route other than sticking to this fade route to the end zone of making music.
Confirmation, I really didn't need confirmation. Like, I always knew that I was going to be doing this, yo. Like, it's crazy, because even back when, you know, back in the day when, you know, my mother, she was always supportive of me. My father, he kind of was like on some shit like, you need to go, you know, get a government job. You know what I'm saying? Like, they wanted me to go to school. Like, I was going to go to school, but at the end of the day, I knew what I was going to be doing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I knew I was going to be making music. So it really wasn't no confirmation sign like, yo, this is where I need to be at. Because it was always, this is where I'm going to be at regardless if I see the confirmation or not. You know, it was no plan B for me. I ain't had no plan B, yo.
Yeah. Plan B is everything to support plan A. Mm-hmm. It's just a branch to make the roots go bigger.
Pretty much.
So, you know, as you say, you didn't have a confirmation. Well, what was that first phone call or that first, you know, that one where it was like, man, I got one. You know,
the first phone call was from Denon Porter when he told me he wanted to sign me as a producer. But the first phone call and confirmation was when T. Mills called me and said he wanted to sign me as a writer. But on top of that, he said, I'm flying you to LA, you're staying here, and you're gonna work with me on this project. That was more of a confirmation than Denon Porter, because Denon Porter was just like, I'm gonna send you this contract, you're gonna sign it, and then we're gonna get you placements. You know what I'm saying? Well, versus T. Mills is like, nah, I'm really gonna sign you, and I'm flying you here to show you, and you're gonna go on the road with me and look and see how I am as an artist and stuff like that. So that was more confirmation for me. And then, of course, I quit my job when he did that, you know what I'm saying? And I went in my boss's office and, you know, pissed off his office and then caught that flight out and left and went to LA. That was confirmation for me. And I ain't never had a job since. So that was definitely confirmation.
Oh, yeah. No, that's what it's like, a real feeling. You know, everything you was doing was like, you know what? It's cool. But this right here is real.
Yep.
And boom, you jumped on that flight into LA.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So as you went from that to, as we know, history hits, because, I mean, you got hits. I mean, one of my favorite songs is Rainy Days.
And
That shit came out, and, you know, West Side Boogie's first, like, his voice just hit. You know, it was the first single, the first thing to show for him, like, mm-hmm. to the world. Not inside Compton, but to the world. And, you know, so it was just like, it was dope. And then, you know, Eminem was on there, and, you know, just the energy of that beat, it made everybody feel like they're going through everything and then able to come out.
Yep. So with that whole record, like, that record is very crazy, because it's not one of my favorite records that, you know, I'm definitely proud that I was able to work with Eminem. He's my favorite artist ever, him and Drake. So to do that was a bucket list. Like, that was something that I never would think would ever happen to me ever. West Side Boogie, you know, he's new. He's a dope artist. I do love his city too. My favorite song from him is Silent Ride. But West Side Boogie, you know, like, he's definitely dope. But it's not one of my favorite tracks that I did, because of how the track came about. And, you know, a lot of people don't know what goes on behind the scene. And the way that actually happened was like some Twilight Zone shit. I met this guy in a masterclass with S1, a big known producer, and he had people playing beats, and this guy came up in the classroom, had to been like in his 40s, bro, older dude, never had no placements, and he played this beat, and I was like, yo, this beat is hard, but it's all over the place. Like, I gotta, like, I want to do it, and I want to send it to Meek Mill. Like, that's my, you know, what I had in mind. So I was like, I asked the dude, I said, yo, you want to send me this session? We can go in, collab on this together, and then I'll just, you know, shoot it over to Meek because that's where I hear on this track. So he said, yeah, and the guy started, like, he broke down, bro, and, like, dropped a tear because it was just, you know, people just don't do that, you know what I mean? And they look at me like, you know, you're going to be one of the greats and you want to work with me. So I did the rec, I did the beat, and it was a sample in there from S1. So I sent it over to S1, like, yo, check this out, you know what I'm saying? Like, we use one of your samples from your kits, and you know that. It's a whole thing with producers where you have to, you know, send it to the, well, you have to let the producer know, you know, when you use the stuff, if you place it. But me and S1 had a crazy relationship. So we was already good anyway. So I just sent it to him to let him hear it, and he was blown away by it. So then I sent it to Meek. Meek didn't respond on it. So I was like, this is crazy. I can't believe Meek didn't, you know, respond. But I don't think Meek ever got the track. Like, a lot of times I send stuff over to certain artists, I don't think they'd be hearing it. So I don't think Meek got it. So S1 ended up sending it to M. So I just remember one day I was in the gym, I was hooping, I'd be hooping every day, I was hooping, and S1 and the dude, other producer, was like texting, and they was talking about, yo, I think we got one, but, you know, keep quiet, you know what I'm saying, like, but this might be a big one. And I'm like, a big one? So I'm like, wait a minute, let me see what he talking about. So I pick up the phone, I call S1, I'm like, yo, what you talking about? He like, yo, M jumped on this track. I said, what? Bro, and I tell you, I broke down. I just started crying, my nigga, because you don't understand, like, this industry is so cutthroat and it's so hard to even, as a new producer, to even get in, because everybody wants a piece of what you're doing. And if you can't give them a piece of what you're doing, they won't even mess with you. You don't even have to be, you could be a bum ass nigga, but as long as you're giving them what you're doing, they're going to put you on. So for me, I'm not really selling my soul. I'm not selling myself short. So it's a little harder for me to get to where I want to go. So when he told me that, it touched, you know, a different place in me, in my soul, especially because my mother hated Eminem and I love Eminem. And I remember battling with her all the time to listen to Eminem. And she knows that Eminem is my favorite artist. So, like, and she passed away in 2016. So it was different. You know what I'm saying? Like, that vibe was different. Plus my father, that was the first CD I got introduced to, Marshall Mathers. My father brought it in the house. My mother was pissed. I'm telling you, like, it was crazy. It was like World War III in the house. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that whole Eminem thing is just, it was different for me. So the song was supposed to go on M's album. That's what it was supposed to do. So I got a call, and they told me that basically M wanted to do a feature for Boogie. And they wanted to use this song to combine it with another song. So I'm like, okay, how's that gonna work? So I'm like, okay, I kind of see where they're going with it. M doesn't want to rap on this beat, he wants to rap on my beat. So I'm like, okay, cool. So they ended up combining it together. So then they told me there was three other producers on this joint. Mind you, it was already three producers with me, S1, and the guy Nate. Then they told me it's three more producers who did this beat for Boogie. So I'm like, who are the producers? They told me who the producers was, and I was like, I said, it's the fucking Twilight Zone. The other producer on the record was Street Runner, right? So Street Runner is my mentor. So I got three people that I look up to. Street Runner is one of my mentors, S1, and Troy Taylor. Those are the three main producers that I always go to with anything. So Street Runner, he knew about the whole thing, but he didn't know who the other producers was on the M side. So I called Street, and I said, yo, Street was good. He's like, man, you know, it's been working, blah, blah, blah. I got a song coming in the Creed movie. It's going to be dope. And I'm like, oh, what song is that? He's like, it's called Rainy Days. You know, I sent this beat over to you before you wrote to it. I said, oh, yeah. I was like, that song got Eminem on it, don't it? He's like, yeah, Eminem's on it and shit. Well, how you know Eminem's on the record? And I was like, yo. I was like, because I'm the other producer on the record. He was like, oh, you got to be fucking kidding me. He was like, bro. He was like, I was so upset when I heard that there was other producers on a record, and it was just a big mess, bro, because they combined these records together. So now it was a record, and they told me that me, S1, and Nate was all going to be co-producers on it, and Street Runner, Killer T were going to be the main producers on it. Now, mind you, I'm not upset because it's Street Runner. Like, that's my guy. Like, Street Runner, that's my man. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I'm excited that I'm on this with Street Runner, but at the same time, when they told me what my percentage was on the record and when they told me what my credits was on the record, it was one of them things where I was just like, damn, nigga just took a big ass bullet. But it's not necessarily an L, but it's like a nigga just took, you know, like a hit off of the record, you know? And at the end of the day, it's a learning lesson, you know what I'm saying? Like, I still was able to work with M. I was able to work with two of the biggest producers in the music industry, period. Street Runner as one, they two of the biggest in the industry, period. So, and I was able to help a guy get his first placement with Eminem, which was like, meant the world to me. So all of that is cool because I knew that if I did it this time, if I could touch Eminem this time, I could touch anybody.
Facts.
So that's why I say it's not one of my favorite, you know, records that I've done. It's not one of my greatest milestones, but it's still, it's pretty cool. You know what I mean?
So, you know, it's crazy is because I keep on looking at your hoodie and your hoodie say Inspire.
Yeah.
And I felt like that whole story about the rainy days was pretty much about inspiring not only yourself, but the person you connected with to get his placement, and then how all these dots got connected through the mud. And when as soon as it got clear and that rain hit and, you know, it cleared everything out, you know, it was able to see, yeah, it wasn't as one as we wanted it to be, or as mm-hmm. good as it started out, but it mm-hmm. still went out to come out to where it is. And so,
yeah.
you know, I like to take heed to it, but that's the highs and the lows. Mm-hmm. And so I want to ask, you know, let me hear about the high. What is your favorite track that you produce? What is something that stand out to you more than the others? And what's some more of the lows so that people understand that, you know, it's gritty, it's grimy, but at the same time, it's incredible. It's like, when you make it out of it, you're there.
Yeah, bro. I got. If I wrote a book tomorrow, I'm telling you it will be a bestseller. It's so many highs and lows in this industry that could just make you just wanna, you know, lose yourself. My high right now is this track that I got called "Lil Quita" by Trap Boy Freddy out of Dallas, Texas. And the reason why that one to me is amazing, and that's my biggest record that I feel like I've done thus far, because I co-produced that with a guy named Khrushchev out in Ohio. But for the simple fact that every component that came together just was just like the Twilight Zone too, bro. Like, it's just, shit is unreal. For one, the beat was not one of my favorite beats. And it's because I'm from Baltimore, bro. Like, I'm from Baltimore. I'm not from the South. I'm from the East Coast. This beat was more geared toward the Texas sound. Now, I'm not really too big on the Texas sound, you know what I'm saying? I respect it because I respect music everywhere in every region, but I wasn't really on the Texas sound. And this was that type of record. It was the Texas sound. And the thing about the record was, when Trap Boy jumped on this record and I heard it, I was like, yo, before it even went anywhere, I said, this gonna be crazy. And all of last year, I've been saying, yo, I really need a radio hit. I need a radio hit. I need a song that's going to radios, you know, in different places, like in different states. Like, I need one of those type of songs. And never in a million years did I expect this record to be that record. And when it came out, bro, once he dropped video, the song went viral. I'm talking about, the song got a million views in one day. It got 2 million views in 2 weeks. So when it started doing that, and then I'm talking about immediately being played. I'm living in Dallas right now, so that's how I was able to do it. So it immediately started playing in every club in Texas, not just Dallas, in Texas. It was in every single club. And then next thing I know, 2 months later, it's on every radio station in every state. So I'm like, yo, this is nuts. I've never seen nothing like this before happen in my career. It's nuts. So now I'm about to have, I have a record that's gonna go down in Dallas history. It's one of the best records to come out of Dallas, and I'm a Baltimore nigga. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, to me, that is a great accomplishment, because it's like, I just came from another region to another region and did their sound and came up with now gonna be their one of the biggest songs in Dallas history, and it's also on the radio. So like, to me, I'm just grateful for that opportunity. You know, that's a big high for me. As far as lows, man, I got a big low, a huge low. I did a song with Meek Mill and Lil Boosie. It was called Fuck You Mean.
Yeah.
It was one of my dopest songs. It was for me at first, because I was an artist, like I said. So I wrote the song, and I wrote it and produced it by myself, and it was for me. And the guy that I was signed to at the time, artist-wise, this man wanted me to be like some Trey Songz, August Alsina type artist. And he didn't want me releasing music like that, what I wrote. But really, that's what I like to do. I like to switch it up. So he wasn't really trying to put no money behind it. So I was like, well, I'm about to just get his song to somebody like me, because it fit him anyway. And I remember sending it to Meek like 7 times, bro, and he ain't listened to it. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, he just didn't listen to the song. So the 8th time or the 7th time that I sent it to him, I just put the hook and the beat in there, and I just sent it. So as soon as it came on, it was, fuck you mean, boy. It was no intro, nigga. It just came on, and you were just automatically turned up.
Copy.
So he heard it, And he went on the internet the next day. I was asleep, bro. I woke up to like, no bullshit. I woke up to like 50 missed calls, hella text messages. My Twitter was blowing up. My Instagram's blowing up. And it's basically saying, because Meek Mill went on Twitter and was like, yo, somebody tell J. Oliver, the producer, to holler at me ASAP or to call me ASAP. And I'm sitting there and I went on my Twitter and I'm like, damn. So I called him and he was like, yo, this song crazy. This about to be my single. I'm going to have this A&R call. You tell him what you want. This is going on my album. So I was like, bruh, I'm like, this is the one. Now, this was in 2014. I'm like, this the one right here. Like, this is about to take me to the levels that I need to get to. Bro, everybody at Atlantic Records was going crazy for this record. They was like, yo, this record is nuts. This about to be the one. It was like, yo, see if he got a publishing deal, all of that. Man, I had publishers hitting me, offering me $250,000 deals. Like, it was crazy. I'm broke. So I'm talking about, they talking about $250,000 and I'm broke, bro. I'm calling my mother like, yo, we about to be straight. You feel what I'm saying? And next thing I know, you get Boosie on it. Boosie fresh out of jail. I'm like, oh, we really going up. I'm like, I don't put Boosie on it. It's a rap. Now I'm really going up. They sent me the record. I heard the record. Meek had a 16 on it and Boosie had a 16 on it. I wasn't really feeling that because the type of record it was a club record. Niggas ain't trying to hear nobody rap for 16 bars. Not no more. They're not trying to hear that. So I was like, I don't really like the format of it, but the shit's still hard. It still go hard. So I was excited about it. Next thing you know, this hating ass, dumb ass judge locked Meek Mill up. So when he got locked up, and this is when he was locked up for a minute, on some stupid shit, cause she a hating ass bitch, you know what I'm saying? So when he got locked up, he was in jail and we just waiting because the song was supposed to been come out. They didn't shoot a music video for it. So I'm like, damn, well, at least I know when he get out, we lit, you feel what I'm saying? Somebody on Instagram sent me a video of the song saying that it's going to release, I think on a Wednesday. And I'm listening and I'm like, yo, this kind of sound like a clean version, like not a rough version, but a mixed version. I'm on my phone listening. I got a good ear. I'm like, this sound like the mixed version. How the fuck these niggas get this? I think it was my mixtapes. How did my mixtapes get this track? Mind you, they paid a lot of bread for the song already. So like a leak would be crazy. So I called Dallas Martin and I'm like, yo, Dallas, like, yo, I think somebody got a hold of the Meek song. And he like, nah, what? That's impossible. He was like, ain't nobody got no hold of that. He was like, I'm gonna call you back. Like, cool, let it alone. I wanna say the next day, Meek Mill Twitter, somebody wrote on Meek Mill's Twitter, fuck you mean, just FYM on the Twitter. So I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, this nigga out of jail. They about to drop the record. This is crazy. This nigga got out of jail. He about to drop the record. Everybody going crazy. They all think Meek is out of jail. They're like, oh, Meek's out of jail. They about to drop the record. And next thing I know, people are like, nah, Meek isn't out of jail, but we're dropping this record. So I'm like, huh? So then I called Dallas and I'm like, and he like, bro, we got to drop the record. They about to leak it. So somebody's about to leak it. So we just need to put it out now. And I'm like, no music video. He said, yeah, bro, look, I apologize, but we got to drop it now. And, you know, I'm going to make sure that you get your credit, make sure you get paid. And I already got my advance, but he was just talking about like royalties on the back end. He was like, but we got to drop it now. So I didn't really understand why he was so somber when he was talking to me about it. But now I do understand, bro. When they dropped that record, they didn't push that record. So people heard it, but nobody heard it. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
And it was one of them things where all the publishing deals gone, because it's like it went from a radio single to his first single off that. Well, besides that, he had that one single with Paloma Ford, so it was going to be after that. So because that didn't come out, I wasn't able to get the publishing deal that I needed. You know what I'm saying? And then it was just like here today and gone tomorrow. So it just it set me back, bro. Like it sent me into a little depression. And I was just down for a few months. Like I was down, bro. Like I was even deciding, like, is this even for me? You know what I mean? Like, do I want to continue doing this? And I had to get out of that funk, bro, because it really devastated me, bro. Like I'm thinking that my life is about to change and then it doesn't. You know what I mean? And these artists, they don't really care. You know what I'm saying? Like right. These A&Rs, these record execs, they don't care about your life. You know what I mean? Like if you ain't making these number one hits, like, oh, you making them hit, they don't care about you. You know what I'm saying? So it's like nobody cared about me when it happened. So I was on my ass and I had to climb out of that hole. That was low for me.
What was the transition from that? Because, you know, that's the biggest thing that people get crushed at. They get into this brick wall with everything's going to happen, and then, you know, life happens. Things out of your control, because, you know,
the transition for me was my inspiration, and my inspiration was my mother. So I'm thinking to myself, like, and this is just how I think, bro. If I don't accomplish what I need to accomplish, or if I don't become successful, my mother's gonna, she's gonna die, and my family, let my family down, and I'm not gonna be able to take care of my family. When that shit hits you, it just makes you go hard, bro. So after that, like I said, I was down for some months, but in the back, and I'm always a creative person, nigga. I'm always trying to create music. So in the back of my mind, I'm like, I say to myself, I did it once, I'm gonna do it again and again and again. So it was one of them things where I was just like, fuck it, and just got back into it, bro. And then 2 years later, I had my first radio single. So, you know, it showed, and I'm not talking about the Loquita, but this other record I did. So it's just like, it just shows you that, you know, you can't really quit. You can't really give up. Like, you know, we get knocked down, but you always bend, but never break. So that's how it was for me.
Yeah, no, you definitely a testament. You got real testimonies, because, you know, you got so many great moments where you just get ready to see the sun break on everything you got going on, and then shadow hits it, and it's back to dust.
Crazy. Happens fast, too.
And it's crazy because I'm referencing the same way how you put it, the Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And boom, you're back on it. It's just, it's such an incredible hustle, but at the same time, it's like, it's an adventure, it's a journey. Sometimes it's draining, but you get these moments of these phone calls, you get these moments of these, like, you know, Twitter, where Meek Mill's saying you need to get in contact with him, and then you got all these people you don't even know hitting you.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Boom, boom. And so, you know, you got to love life for that. So then, you know, I got to ask you, what was something that you know, you would never do again from that? You know, what's something that made you today where your whole business standpoint is different?
It's not really nothing that I wouldn't do again. Like it's really no lesson as far as what I would do again, because all of that was out of my hand. It was out of my control. If there was any lesson to be made, I mean, like I said, it really isn't. Because it's like, when you look at it, the publishing companies were offering me those deals. Of course, I could have took that money, you know, but it was one publishing company who was offering that money, and I'm glad I didn't sign with them. And I'm glad I never was signed with them. So it's like, damn, like, I was about to sign with them. If this would have went through, I might have signed with them, you feel what I'm saying? And I might have taken a publishing deal, a co-pub deal with a publishing company, and I'm already on a sub-publishing company. So I would have been really messed up, bro. So it's like one of them things where now I know the business, I almost look at that situation, I'm like, damn, I didn't need that, because I could possibly still be messed down, tied down now. So I'm actually kind of glad that I didn't do any deals. That's why I say it's not really it's one of them things where it was out of my control. I really couldn't control that situation.
But it's sort of like incredible, because, you know, we have moments in our life, if we would have chose to get that, would have went through, we would have had all these struggles of not knowing what to do to get through what you're doing now.
Yeah, facts.
Like, facts. That's incredible. That's a part of the journey.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to ask about, you know, one of those number one Billboard hardwares behind you. You know, which one of those is your favorite?
This one.
Rick Ross?
Yeah. Yeah, and that one, because I didn't produce a record on there. I wrote a record on there. And how it happened, it was crazy. Like, the way that happened, that record I wrote the hook for Bogus Charms. And it was called Broken Memories at first. And I wrote it for my mother. A lot of my life, bro, it just has to do, you know, with my mom's, just because of what we went through together. But I wrote Bogus Charms, Broken Memory for my mom's, and Street Runner produced the track, and Street Runner had told me that he wanted to do an album with me, because he liked, you know, he liked how my flow, he liked my, you know, how I did things, you know, as an artist, and he wanted to do it. So we was working on an album, and when I finally decided that being an artist just wasn't for me, like, I didn't want to do it anymore, I told Street Runner, I was like, yo, we got some dope records, let me just send these records out and see who, you know, likes what. So at first, I was singing on this record, and I didn't like my voice on it because I felt like if I got a white boy who looked like Justin Bieber, it would be a bigger song. So I took myself off, and I had this guy who used to be signed on the same label that I was on. His name is Sam Harvey. I wanted him to sing on it because, you know, he looked like Justin Bieber and he could really sing. So I kept him on the hook, and I remember sending it to Cruz, Meek Mill's engineer. And Cruz was like, and they hit me back immediately. I want to say, if it wasn't that day, they hit me back the next day. And they was like, yo, this record is crazy. I think you got one. Meek really loved this record. I was like, cool. I didn't produce it though. I wrote it. Street Runner produced it. He said, okay, cool. I'm going to get in contact with Street. So he called Street. Street called me like, yo, appreciate you for sending that to Meek. Like, you know, they said they're gonna use it for Meek and blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, cool. So Meek got locked up again, bro. The same judge locked him up again. So I think what happened in the process of that, I think that it was Meek Mill with Rick Ross on it, and he ended up switching it and having Rick Ross featuring Meek Mill on it, right? So Street Runner told me that it was going to be on Rick Ross's album, so I knew that it was going to be on the album. But what was more special to me was the fact that they kept Sam on this record. The artist that I was on the label with me, they actually kept him on the record, and that was special to me because it was like, yo, not only am I helping myself, but I'm helping out somebody else get recognition and love, you know? So people are like, damn, Sam, you want a song with Rick Ross and Meek Mill? Like, that's crazy. So it was just like, and I was able to give him, like, because he wasn't supposed to get any publishing or any percentage on the song because, I mean, he didn't write it. I wrote the whole thing, but it was love. And I was like, yo, take this much percentage from me. And you know what I'm saying? So we all can eat, and you know, you can build your publishing and your percentages up, you know? So that was just, it was dope for me that I was able to do that. So that's, you know, that's my favorite one that I did.
You know what's crazy is that each story that you have this whole pretty much like, you were the friend that had $5 and you went to the store and bought everything for everybody with this $5. You didn't buy a 2-liter and the biggest bag of chips and took it to yourself.
Yeah. You know?
And at the same time, that comes from the struggle, that comes from values, that comes from understanding. Like, and you know, seeing, I can guarantee that your mom was a big inspiration of all of that because she took that same money and made everything work for the whole family.
Yeah. So,
if that's what you constantly see, you know, you got to replicate it. You got to take what's in your surroundings, in your atmosphere, and then you find a way to replicate it. And it's just incredible because along your journey, you got all these other people that have history being made. As much as it is your history, it's their history.
Exactly.
That's huge. That's huge. Because, you know, a lot of the times people get left out, you know.
People get left out all the time, bro. I mean, I got screwed over a lot. People get left out all the time. And most of the time when I'm doing music with people, like, I have a great relationship with them. Like, most of my placements, I've had, like, you know, dope relationships with the people that I worked on it with. And I never want to see them left out of anything. I never want to see them get screwed over on anything. You know what I mean? There's even been a situation with a song that I have coming out with a big artist that, you know, I had to, you know, a guy, he had to take it. I had to take his name off of being a producer and change it to a musician on the record. And it hurt me. It pained me to do it. Like, it hurt me to do it because I know what it means to have your name on there as a producer. One, you get more percentages on the song, and two, when it's being blasted everywhere, your name is right there along with the artist, and I really bang with him tough. Like, that's my guy. So, you know, I had to call him, and I had to sit there, and I had to tell him, and it was hard because I knew he was going to be upset, you know. But it's like one of them things where you can be upset, but you're not going to turn down the opportunity because it's an opportunity you wouldn't have had. And it was just one of them things, bro, where I don't like doing stuff like that. Like, I want everybody to, you know, but you can't always be fair in the situation. And I understand that. I know, like, it's been times where I've done records and A&Rs are telling me, if you don't give me a percentage, then I'm not pushing this and I'm not gonna do this with it. So I had to, you know, get spanked in order for the record to come out. So it's just, I don't wanna do that to people. I hate doing that.
Man, no, that's deep. That's incredibly deep, because at the same time, you still found a way for him to get musician credit. And, you know, that I granted that it's not the same pay, but it's still the history that is still being done. But you just that loyal of a person that it's like, man, it painstakings me for you to go through this because I'm I'm trying to get everybody to skip over the holes I fell in.
Yeah, because I've been through it, bro. And I always put myself in other people's positions. And you know, somebody like that, you look at they first, the first thing I look at is this man got a wife, he got three kids, you know what I'm saying? So I look at stuff like that and I understand the business. So I know that, you know, with this credit and a higher percentage, you can get a higher publishing deal or higher administration deal, you know what I mean? Like higher royalties on the back end. So it's like, I look at all of that. So I try to accommodate people the best I can, you know, and I notice sometimes I kind of got to chill out on that, you know what I mean? Because I got to make sure I'm straight too. But, you know, I don't know. I always looked at other people first before I looked at myself. It's just one of them things that, you know, I've learned over the years, and that's just how I've become.
So, you know, I got to ask this question because I'm about to transition out. But, you know, I feel like your biggest battle is being selfish versus selfless. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to make that choice on what you do because that is the type of person you are. And you realize, you know, as much as you can be selfless, you know, sometimes people can take that and bend that the wrong way. And then as much as you can be selfish, you know, people bend that the wrong way. So it's no happy medium.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree with you on that.
So I'm about to transition out. I got my awareness segment. And, you know, I have this thing where a lot of youngsters don't know what to do in a situation. And, you know, it's nothing like having their favorite artist, favorite songwriter, producer talk about this encounterment. And I'm talking about, you know, when the red and blue lights hit, that high beam hits the back of your neck, the blurt sound hits, that high beam's looking to see anybody else in the car, and you get pulled over. And so, you know, I like to ask my guests, when's the last time they're pulled over? And what's some advice they can give to the youngsters? Like, you know, if it was their little brother, their son, they partner that don't know what to do.
Last time I was pulled over, bro, was a long time ago, but I was going to Kansas City. I was with my family. We was going to see the Ravens play the Chiefs because I'm a big Ravens fan. So, you know, I was driving down there to go see the Ravens play the Chiefs, and I was on a phone, and I think I was damn near doing 100. I was driving from Dallas to Kansas because I wanted to do a little road trip. It's like a little 6-7 hour trip. And the cop pulled me over, and me, you know, I don't get smart with police officers. I don't argue with police officers. I keep quiet. I do everything that they ask me to do. I don't talk. I don't ask them, you know what I'm saying? I don't ask them no questions. You know, they tell me why they pulled me over, and we take it from there. The cop actually asked me to step out of the car and get in his car, which was the first time I ever had to do that. You know, and when I got in his car, he just started asking me a whole bunch of questions. And, you know, I answered the questions like I was supposed to, you know, and he sent me on my way. But, you know, that's one of the things that you got to do, bro. You just have to, I mean, if you ride dirty and you ride illegal, then I mean, you're in a predicament, you know? But the moment you start getting hostile or getting smart or, you know, attitudes with the cops, you know, that's just what they do. They got the gun, they got the badge. So it's like, if you value your life and you value your family, you're just gonna have to take that L. People take that pride thing, bro, and they just run with it. Like, sometimes you gotta drop your pride, bro. Like, if you value your family and your life, you have to drop your pride.
I know, that's important. Because at the end of the day, they have a chip on their shoulder because they got the badge.
Mm-hmm. They got the badge.
No, I appreciate you expressing that because, you know, it's a moment. I mean, here you are, you're riding with your family, trying to get to the game. You juiced, you're on club. I'm trying to get there soon. We sightseeing, we'll slow down to see this. And then here you see the red and blue lights, and then boom, he's talking about get in the car.
Yeah, he told
me. Get in the car.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to be back.
My sister was like, I'm trying to figure out why the hell he asked you to get in the car. And she was really upset about that. Me, it was one of them things where I was like, I know I don't got nothing on me. Like, you know, I ride around with a pistol, but I ain't have no pistol on me at that time. So I was like, I don't got nothing on me. I don't want no drugs in here, nothing like that. So I mean, he just moved me to speed ticket. He see my baby and everything is in here. So he's not gonna take me to jail for, you know, speeding too much. But, you know, it ended up being like, I ended up getting a warrant for my arrest because of that ticket because I didn't pay it. And I just in another state, so I said, forget it. But I paid it off though, like $700.
Lesson learned. Let me, I do want to point this out, you know, before I get into my fun segment, I got to give you your flowers for being a dedicated father because, you know, all the dedicated dads and moms that come on the show, they don't understand it's not easy being a parent and working in the industry and trying to find a balance. And, you know, trying to be there. So, you know, I do got to ask, how do you find a balance?
I don't know, bro. Like, finding a balance with my kid. Like, you know, I have my daughter and I have my niece and my nephew. I make that balance work. I make a balance. Like, I'll take time, like if I'm doing something, if I'm making music, then I'll stop making music and then I'll go take my daughter and we'll go outside, we'll go play, we'll go do whatever. Then I'll come back, make music, and then, you know, keep doing the same thing. Like, or I'll pick days and be like, yo, let's go to the bounce house or wherever. But when it comes to family, bro, I make that balance. Like you said, though, there are sometimes when you have to sacrifice and I have to make people around me understand that because they don't really get it, you know? So if I have to fly somewhere, then I have to fly somewhere. And you need to understand that because if I didn't do this, then we wouldn't have this. You get what I'm saying? So it's like one of them things where I can create the balance. Like it's easy for me to create the balance to be home and to, because when I'm home, like if I'm traveling on the road, when I come home, that's their time. I'm with them, that's their time. But when I'm on the road working, I'm working, and you have to understand that. So, it, you know, it's easy for me to create the balance. Like I said, the coronavirus just made me, you know, appreciate being with family, you know what I'm saying? And actually taking that break to be with them and see them every day, so.
No, that's facts. And at the same time, I like to think of it as all the stuff I get done while I'm home, they'll miss me more while I'm gone.
Yeah, they always do.
So, man, I got this thing called Trading Places. And, you know, it's like that Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy movie where, you know, they wake up and the lives have changed and the world's different. And so I take two iconic lives and we swap them. And question number one is, will it work? And what would life be like if they traded places? You know, what would be one thing that's crazy? And so, you know, I got a little win from a bird that you are a fan of Eminem. So I took Eminem and we're going to trade places with Cedric the Entertainer. So question number one is, will it work? Can Cedric gas and do all these incredible things Eminem has done? And then at the same time, do you think Eminem could be that comedian that could set off the crowd and set off the fire and be on TV like that?
I don't think Cedric could do what Eminem is doing, no. He couldn't. But I do think Eminem could do what Cedric is doing because Eminem is not trying to do with Cedric. You get what I'm saying? He's not trying to be that person. He's himself. Alone, you gonna get fine comedy in that. Like, he's himself. Like, that alone is hilarious. You've heard the Marshall Mathers album. You know what I'm saying? You heard the Eminem show. Like, that dude is something else, bro. The Ken skits and all of that. Like, Eminem trading spaces with Cedric, yeah. But Cedric being him, hell no. Not even close. No way.
Oh, shit. So can you see Eminem and Get Cool? No, I can see Eminem was gangster as fuck in Car Wash. I mean, in The Wash. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was gangster as fuck. So I can see him doing anything. I can see it.
Yeah.
Definitely, definitely.
I got the motherfucking AK, and I'm going to spray everything and some away.
Yeah, I can't see Cedric big ass doing that. He's going to be out of breath trying to keep up with Eminem words.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly my point.
Oh, shit. So, man, I got this next segment. It's called Impulse Q&A, and pretty much it's like questions from a fan perspective. They're like questions on a card, and the idea is you got to answer three questions, and you could pass, but you still got to answer three questions. And I don't know what they are. I just randomly grabbed a card. Okay. Question number one. If you could only eat one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Clams. That's my shit. That's easy.
Question number two.
Mm-hmm.
If you were stranded on a desert island and you could only choose one person to keep company, who would it be, and what about one animal?
Pass. I love too many people.
He said, fuck that. You know what? That's another question that is about people, so let me pass that. If you were reincarnated as a famous landmark, which would it be?
Famous landmark. If I was reincarnated as a landmark,
yeah,
that's weird as shit. As a landmark, what the fuck? I was reincarnated as a landmark, bro. Pass. That's a weird question. Landmark.
Is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
Is a hot dog a sandwich? No, it's not a sandwich because it ain't on bread. It's on a bun. It's gotta be on bread to be a sandwich. Even though a bun is bread, but it's called bun, so it's not a sandwich. But technically it's bread, so I guess it would be considered. Oh, that's crazy. Trying to fuck my head up. That's crazy.
Oh shit. Bro, you think I'm doing it? It's the questions. All I'm doing is reading the card.
That is a crazy question, yo.
He gonna think about it the rest of the day.
Yo, and I was for sure, I had to answer. I'm like, yo, like, but bun is bread technically though. So technically it would be a sandwich.
Damn, so you gonna go to Costco or Sam's Club, like, let me get that $1.50 sandwich and drink.
Nigga, look at me like I'm crazy.
Question number three. How much would someone have to pay you for your little toe?
For my little toe?
He said, how much would someone have to pay you for your little toe?
Like my pinky toe?
Yeah.
Let me see something. At no amount. I got a hoop. I can't hoop with no toe. They got to take the middle toe. They got to take my... Yeah. What's I need my little toe.
What's the ticket? What's the black market ticket?
That's why I was looking at my feet to see. I'm like, okay, this little third toe right here, I don't need that shit, but I need the base. I need my little toe. The ticket on my third toe, yo, they could take. They gonna have. They can give me $500,000. They can have that bitch. Give me $500,000. You can take that third toe. For real, knock me out. Give me some pain medicine when I wake up. Go ahead and take it. Give me $500,000. Take that toe.
Shit. So, bruh, let me ask you this. What are you most excited for coming up? I know you talked about some records that you got coming out soon. But, you know,
I got a couple of records that's coming up. It's not real. I'm not really necessarily excited for them because it's like when you work so hard at this, bro, like when the records come out, you just be like, thank God, damn. Like, it's like one of them process type of things. But, I mean, I'm excited. I'll tell you what I am excited for that's coming up that I'm really excited for. I'm going on a bachelor party.
Hey,
my best friend getting married. We were supposed to be in the Dominican Republic last week, but we pushed it to July. So I think everything will open up by then. So I'm pretty sure we'll be in the Dominican Republic in July, and I'll be with all my brothers. So when we get together, bro, it's just like one of them experiences that you just will never forget. Because the last time we did it, we went on a cruise, and I remember everything about it. Like, because the people that I love, I'm with them. I was supposed to be going to Thailand the first week of June, but I had to cancel that. So definitely looking forward to this trip with my brothers.
You know what? I got to make sure I tell you this. I appreciate you. You gave me the realest answer ever because everybody wants to promote whenever I ask that question. And, bro, I don't mind it. I like promoting. I want your music and everything to be downloaded and be heard and videos to be watched, movies to be seen, everything. I want that. But you gave me the realest answer because you was like, man, I can't wait to be with my folks. Like,
yeah,
be somewhere where we can all have fun.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you one thing that's really changed my whole perspective, bro. Death. And I'm not just talking about a death of, like, you know, somebody that you know, a friend, because, you know, I have had friends die. Like, one of my friends got hit by a car, he died. Another friend got shot, he died. You know, but when it really hits you with somebody that you love and that you thought that you could never be without, it's either going to make you or it's going to break you. And when it makes you, it teaches you. And it's one of them life things. So losing my mother taught me that I need to love everybody every second of the day. I need to show you that I love you, that I care for you, and that I'm here for you. Because tomorrow you could be gone. Then I'm not going to have that time with you anymore. So it's like, I'd rather spend time with my family, my friends, than anything in the world, bro. I mean, you need money to survive. And of course, I want to get as much as I can so that I can take care of and spend time with them. But at the end of the day, bro, money and all that shit, that don't matter, bro. Like, I be telling people all the time, kiss your kids, kiss your family, kiss your mother, kiss your father. Let them know that you love them. You know what I'm saying? Because that's big to me. So like I said, if I can spend time with all my best friends, it's funny because niggas be like, yeah, you got a lot of best friends. Like I've known them for over my whole life. I got like six of them. They're still here. They're still living. You know what I'm saying? We're growing old together. So it's like one of them things where when I can spend time with them, I do, because they don't live in Dallas. They all live in Baltimore. I'm the only one here. You get what I'm saying? So it's like, it's a little different.
Man, bro, that's incredible, bro. So if you notice, bro, this show has been a little unique. It did get the history like everybody else, but it's different. And so I was like, man, how do I kill off my show and be different throughout? And so I figured this thing out. I said, you got any questions for me?
Yeah. Do questions for you?
Yes, sir. See,
you ever used to rap?
Huh?
You used to rap?
A long time ago when I used to pop these pills and fuck around, but I engineered most of the time. Like, I'm behind the scenes. I A&R.
Behind the scenes? Okay. Because you're very, I asked you that because even while I'm like talking to you, I don't really know much about you, but I'm you know a lot about the business, like not necessarily the business aspect of it, but you know a lot about the game, if that makes sense. Like I can hear the knowledge, like even with the questions you asking, you do your research, you dive into it. So you know, that's why I asked you that question.
That's love. No, bro, I love music. Like this is what I've been wanting to do. I've been, you know, I take left and right turns, and I found a way to get right on the middle of the path of just staying on the music.
So other question. What part of the West Coast are you originally from? Like where do you stay like on the West Coast?
LA.
LA? Okay.
My family from the Bay.
Yo, you sound like you're from the Bay. That's what I was about to say. I'm like, I thought you was from the Bay.
Nah, shit. A lot of the sauce is on me from the Bay. I ain't gonna lie to you. But LA is where I'm rooted from. You know, my family is from the East Coast. They're from Virginia, Maryland, Michigan.
Okay.
That's like on my dad's side of the family or whatever. And I still got a sister that's staying in Maryland right now. She's in Ocean City. She likes to sell houses and stuff, so.
Yeah, I've been to the Bay twice. I've been to San Francisco and of course Oakland. I'm real cool with Kevin Durant, so I went out there one time, you know, just kicking with him and going to the Warrior games, and then I went out to San Francisco for a New Year's Eve party, and it was nuts. I love the Bay. That's what I was saying. I love it out there, bro. I love it.
Man, bruh, I appreciate you, bro. I appreciate you coming on the show. Man, it's Contrast Uncut, Season 3, Episode 2. I've had the pleasure and honor of rocking with super producer, mega songwriter. I mean, mega talented, bruh. I mean, he got gems of stories and history of just doing the right thing and looking what happens and creating ways for people to jump over the loopholes. Man, fresh air, bruh. It's been a fresh breath of air with you, bruh.
No problem. I've definitely enjoyed it. The realness of the interview, I appreciate everything, man. Appreciate it.
That's love, man. That's love.
What's up, man? It's your boy Fresh Air. You know what I'm saying? I'm just rocking with Contrast Uncut, man. I appreciate the love and the interview. Shout out to Snoop's Army and Bobby D, man. Appreciate it. Would love to come back, man.
Hey. Mama said knock you out, double L, Cool J. Time still ticking though, big clock, flavor flame. That's a public enemy, they see me coming up. Every verse I'm going flip mode, squad, bust a bus. Feel like pocket, keep your head. Wasn't that a really good episode?
I know. Did you enjoy it? Because I enjoyed it. Can you hit the like button for me next? Can you hit the subscribe button for me next? And go ahead, leave some comments below. I check them out. I show them to who I interviewed. We got more content, more Contrast Uncut. You know there's some boxes over here. Kev,
yo.
You're supposed to have some boxes over here.
I'll get them up.
And you know, more episodes on the way. Make sure you tune in. Contrast Uncut. It's DJ Juan Dallas.